And welcome live from the Dr. Henry Armitage Memorial High School AV room. Welcome to episode 105 of the Horror Podcast. My name is Tyler and I run Signal Horizon, a magazine dedicated to exploring genre fiction in and out of the classroom.
And I'm Warren Gray. I'm Monster Ambassador at Signal Horizon and the guy who usually picks whatever weird ass movie we're talking about on a night, including tonight's. So you can blame me for this.
Nah, this one's going to be an interesting one to talk about. Tonight on the Horror Podcast, though, we're going to spend some time talking about what we've been watching and maybe reading, and then we'll move on to our dark corners of the web to help you find some free content on the internet, and we'll spend the remainder of the episode discussing the very talky and very walky 1983 classic, One Dark Night. As you might have noticed, this season, you can check out all our back seasons, all our back episodes for free on iTunes or any other main podcatcher. But also, some of you are catching our live stream, which is awesome. You can catch episodes live of what we are doing on our YouTube channel over at Signal Horizon. So with that in mind, let's move on to what we've been watching, what we've been reading, you know, what we're excited about. Oren, what's going on? Over at the Gray, at Castle Gray.
Once again, I'm going to talk about something I'm not reading yet, but I just got in the mail John Langan's latest collection, Children of the Fang, which I am super excited to dig into as soon as I get down on the cornfield. But it's very thick also. Like,
That's a tome, man. That's huge.
Like a lot of, like, the table of contents has a lot of stories in it, which normally, like, when you get a John Langan collection, it is this thick. It's like five stories because they're all like novellas. This one's got like a bunch, which I'm really excited. So,
that's very cool.
That's what I'm looking forward to reading anyway.
it's really been since Wide Carnivorous Sky that I think he's had a lot of smaller ones, right? The Sapphira collection I thought was fantastic, but it felt like it was built just like that, you know, kind of three or four big key stories, which were all great, but
I think Sapphira was like legit maybe five stories or something. Which is great, but it's nice to get it's exciting to just get like a lot of different topics like from him. And also the story that I got to solicit from him for Fungi's in this one, so that I'm excited about that.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Like, it's like Six Degrees or Full Circle or whatever fucking aphorism you want to say. I dig it. Yeah. And I love John. We had him on, I think last season, and he's just, he's smarter than shit. Like, the guy knows his serious chops about genre stuff in general, but also he's just incredibly nice. So, you know, he's like,
he's a super nice guy and an amazing writer. Like, I love his stuff. I think he's one of the best, like, since I'm, you know, kind of the monster guy, I think he writes some of the best monsters of anybody writing right now. Like, his takes on both classic and newish monsters is really interesting always. It's unfair.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm jealous. I'll have to borrow that from you and maybe throw up a review on Signal Horizon here before too long. I like it. What else you got?
And that's what I've been reading, or that's what I'm going to be reading. I've been reading Clown in the Cornfield, which is amazing. So far, I'm not very far yet. I watched Crawl finally, like, you know, so I'm only.
We've been bantering about it. Yeah. Right?
I watched Crawl, which was, you know, fun. I watched Burning Bright, which is just Crawl, again, only with tigers, and 10 years earlier. Also, you know, because tigers, that makes a ton of sense, right? I love that Burning Bright came out first of those two. It's like, wow, yeah, we have someone trapped in a house in a hurricane. What kind of big carnivorous animal should they be trapped in there with? And tigers is the one someone thought of first.
Right, right. Like, they're not reaching the bottom of the barrel. Like, that's at the top, you know?
Yep. Like, yeah, apparently, first thing was like, Hurricane plus Tigers. Makes sense to me. Put them in.
Yeah. I have not seen Burning Bright, but I do agree with Katie here in the chat. I thought Crawl was a ton of fun. If you don't take it for anything more than it is, you know, this kind of basic thing, it's fine, you know? Yeah, it's got Barry Pepper in it. Come on.
What I think I called it on Letterboxd like aggressively acceptable or something like that. Like, the only downside about Crawl, and if you get over this or don't care about this, then it's great. But like what I called it there was like it's a movie about a person trapped in a CGI house with CGI alligators in a CGI hurricane in CGI Florida. If you're okay with all that, then you're fine. It's fine.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with it past that.
Yeah. Well, and like I joke about Barry Pepper, but I think I had to like that movie because I was like, I've always liked Barry Pepper and he's always been this cool guy. And then I woke up one day and Barry Pepper was like 45 years old and is playing a guy that has like a college like daughter. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm fucked. You know, I just turned 40 like last month and it's like, okay, all right, I get it. You know,
you can grow up to be Barry Pepper. See, it's fine.
Yeah, right. I could grow up. I could still be my own hero. I love it.
You could lose like 3/4 of your limbs and still be fine. Like that dude did.
Yeah, that fucker got bit like 12 times.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I kept like I do this in movies a lot, but I was like, I spent that entire movie going like everyone in this movie's in shock and dead.
Yeah.
Like that adrenaline surge is only going to keep you going so long, people.
Yeah,
That long is not all damn day.
And slowly but surely, one of those crocodile bites is going to do some damage, you know? I do agree here with Patrick, who kind of highlighted...
Chat. I am missing this entirely.
Oh, no.
Like, is it on the side for you?
Yeah, it's on the side for me. Click on the comment box, maybe?
Oh, they're there. Okay, now they're showing up. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
But the father-daughter relationship, I mean, it's not the deepest thing in the entire world, but I love that it's complicated, you know? Yeah. Like, there's a lot of shit going on there. It's not just like, oh, I love you or, oh, I hate you. It's like, holy shit, maybe my dad is a complex human being with emotions of his own, which, like, I don't know. Maybe because I'm old, I identify more with that, you know? I try to urge all my high school kids, because if I had a nickel for every time a high school girl especially was like, my mom's such a bitch, you know, like I hear that all the time. I'm like, they may come across that way, but they're also human beings, you know, like they're doing their best with what they got. So yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
We'll save the Crawl episode maybe next
crawl
time.
Episode? Yeah.
maybe but I'll kind of touch on what I have been doing as of late. We went back to school, so like I don't know. The whole world is chaos, and I have been mostly horrified, not by the stuff I'm ingesting, but by the stuff I'm around every day. So a couple of things. Number one, I've talked about this a few times, but that's Cursed Films. It's out on Blu-ray right now by RLJE, and it is fantastic for no other reason. You can catch all that shit for free. Using a promo code over at Shudder if you just wanted to watch the episodes. What I think is fantastic about the Blu-ray is they have Jay Cheel, who's the director, the guy that put it all together. He's got a commentary track over everything. So he's like there is a particular character in the Poltergeist episode, I won't ruin too much for you, where I found a little over the top, right? I was like, is this guy for real? And Cheel mentioned when I interviewed him when it originally came out, but you can totally hear it and see a lot of that in the director's commentary. He's like this guy is not a character. He's genuinely that into like his shit, which is amazing to me, you know, like he is not a caricature. This guy is living his best life in this context. And I've never wanted to be somebody more than that guy, you know, at least for an hour or two. Be like, your world is fucking insane but awesome. So you know, hey, whatever. So yeah, that has commandeered a lot of my time, but I want to also show off that Blood Quantum came out, and it is one of my favorite films of the year. And I think you and I both liked it, right?
Yeah, it was fun. It was good.
Yeah, we did a whole episode, I think, right at the end of the last season about it. It is...
Wilds, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. With Gemma, who is fantastic and way more knowledgeable than I when it comes to indigenous horror. But, yeah. And it will pair really well. Miskatonic University has a lecture coming out all about indigenous horror. And oh, I... Cool. Yeah. Like, I think checking out Blood Quantum and then... like listening to that lecture and seeing that lecture, I think would be, I don't know, pretty bonker brains. So, and I have not been reading because it's spooky season, Oren. And every year my son says to me, like, what spooky thing are we going to watch? You know, we tried to watch one scary movie every day for the entire month of October that like lasted 4 days or something, but you know, whatever. But I got in the mail from Paramount this thing here. All right. So it is theoretically movies based off of Stephen King's writing. So it's like The Stand, Pet Sematary, The New Pet Sematary, Silver Bullet, and Dead Zone. So
I think Pet Sematary 2 on there, and then it could have just been like 2/3 Pet Sematary. And it would
right, be- right. Yeah. I mean, I even think there is a straight to video like third movie. So yeah. So I think Jack and I are going to make our way through that. Although The Stand is like a mini series that's like 14 hours long.
You're going to be watching The Stand till Halloween, then what?
Yeah, right, right. Until the new Stand comes out, which...
I don't know when that is. Is that before Halloween? I don't even know.
No. Okay. Not until January. I think this is me guessing a little bit. I think it was supposed to come out a little bit earlier, and they were like, fuck. The shit's a little too real right now, so let's push it. Maybe.
I don't know when anything's happening anymore either, and I don't think anyone else does. Like, I everybody was talking to him because the Dune trailer dropped, and it was like in the trailer it claims like December 2020, and it's like, we'll see.
Yeah, right.
Not
right.
Sure I believe that.
It was like the New Mutants, right? That thing that has just been sitting in a can somewhere for years and years.
Yeah, the week that theaters reopened was a choice to drop it in theaters then finally. Yeah.
Yeah.
A decision, certainly.
That is a choice. That's for sure. Well, and the question I keep returning back to, right? First off, if you're going to see a movie, don't like, not that there's anything wrong with AMC. There are great people that work there. It's hometown here in Kansas City. But if you're going to see a movie, make that first movie at Screenland Armor or another locally owned theater, because A, I think they're hurting, and B, they want your business and are going to like clean their theaters and make sure your shit is good. So, but I keep asking myself, is this a movie that I'm willing to die to see? And 100% it is not the New Mutants. All right. I'm not willing to do it.
I haven't actually been back to the theater yet. And like, I know that if I went to the Screenland, I'd be fine. Because I know they're taking it seriously. I know they're being safe. Like, I know they're doing all their stuff, right? Because I see it all the back end. I see people talking about it. So I know it'd be fine. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, it's not even that I think I'm going to die, but it's just like, is this worth like breaking quarantine for? And the answer is like, not for New Mutants for sure.
Yeah, right. And like, I was maybe for the new Christopher Nolan tentpole, and I was like, no. So the Dune trailer came out today, and I'm like, this new Dune looks fucking badass. Maybe I'd be willing to go to see Dune.
By December.
By December, maybe. I mean, also, who the hell knows, you know, what December is going to look like.
Yeah,
so.
Like, I'm waiting for us to have just another ridiculous spike now that we've opened schools. Like, I know some of them are being smarter than others, but.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing our best. We're all wearing our masks, but it's still like, it is what it is.
You know, like, it's going to increase risk no matter how careful you are, you know. It can't not.
Right, exactly. So
we'll see. I'm hoping that we'll start to have Shocktober and like actual have some in-person screenings with some distancing and stuff in October at the screen.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Fingers crossed.
I will go for that.
Theoretically, Oren and I may be hosting some events as part of that It's like Panic Fest Extension. I think it's called Tricks or Treats or something along those lines. But they have some really awesome content headed our way as part of the extension of that festival. We have talked about that festival a lot. It is awesome. It is amazing. It is local if you're here in the Kansas City area. So, you know, mosey on over to Panic Fest and, you know, see what their online content will be. I think they're going to release it here in a couple of weeks. So, okay. Well, I have talked to you all about what I am watching, not necessarily reading, but I have also my 4-year-old son, because I'm a terrible parent, is really into Siren Head, which is this scary monster that's like shaped like a gigantic siren. It is terrifying and creeps me out.
Great picture of Henderson, who is an amazing artist. You should all follow on Twitter.
He's
on Twitter. You should follow him. He's amazing.
It is deeply unsettling, so it is like, okay. But he's also into this game called Granny and Grandpa, which is like, it takes the really disturbing and creepy parts of that M. Night Shyamalan movie with the old people. Mm-hmm. The Visit, that's it. Yeah, coming through in the clutch. So it takes all the creepy parts of that and kind of combines it with one of those games where you have to put a puzzle together. Like, you have to distract Granny by throwing a rock in another room, and then she'll scuttle over and like investigate it. And then you have to hide in the closet. And all my 4-year-old wants to do is watch you play this game. And it scares the piss out of me. It is entirely free on the App Store. I don't know if it's free for a computer, but I would imagine it would be. I'm sure it has some like buy-in capabilities or whatever. But if you want just a creepy way to kill some time, check out Granny and Grandpa, because it's fucking terrifying. So old people scuttling around are terrifying. That's just the bottom line.
People scuttling around are obviously creepy. Like, movies use it all the time. So, like, obviously, like, people moving wrong is scary.
Yeah.
I think that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and we understand, like, the biological impetus for that, right? Like, we get when you see somebody like that, it typically is diseased and it terrifies you or whatever. But also, Granny and Grandpa, just plain scary. So, okay, man. I think it's time. I think it's time to introduce tonight's essential question.
It's time for our only short summary of a movie ever in the entire history of this podcast.
I know, it like fell in my lap. I'm like, oh my God, Oren's going to be so thrilled. But here is tonight's essential question. Is One Dark Night a prequel to The Dark Knight? No, that's not it. That would be an easy question to answer. But how about... how about, is One Dark Night more talky or more walky? I have lots of opinions about that. But before we get to those opinions, here is the one sentence Internet Movie Database summary of this movie. As part of an initiation into a club called The Sisters, a young girl must spend the night in a mausoleum.
Carl Raymar died of an apparent heart attack. But the bizarre condition of his apartment and the true cause of death of the missing girls remains a mystery at this hour.
Do you have any idea why your father murdered those girls?
There's no proof that he murdered them. There's no questions.
Here you go.
Julie ain't no sister yet, Kitty.
Well, she's passed every test you've given her.
For your information, Leslie, I'm far from finished with her initiation.
I've got to prove I can do it.
All she wants to do is show how weak and chicken you are.
Yeah, and that's all the more reason why I won't back down.
So I'm supposed to stay out here all night?
Of course not. You're staying in there.
Mausoleum?
Uh-huh. We'll be back in the morning to make sure you stayed in there all night long.
Mrs. McKenna, my name is Samuel Dockstetter, and I'm a feature writer for the World of the Occult. Do you know anything about bioenergy? It's the electromagnetic force in all living things. Carl Raymar was one of the only true practitioners of telekinesis in the world.
Raymar? He could move things with his mind.
He was a genius in his field until...
they found a whole bunch of dead girls in his apartment.
Doing some hereditary studies, we found that members of the same family often possess similar psychic powers. Considering the strength of his powers, it would be interesting to follow up.
Maybe he wants...
What happened?
I'm going back there. Back to the mausoleum.
That's all I got.
Well, it's so good too because it like it completely buries the lead of the movie. So it's like this is the setup. It could be literally anything from here. This could be a romantic comedy based on that sentence. It's unlikely, but it's possible.
Yeah.
Like this could go literally anyway. We didn't bother to tell you anything about the actual plot, just the setup.
Yeah. And I mean, here's the bottom line, like the bulk of the movie takes place in the mausoleum. Like, I know why they reference that. But yeah, they completely leave out, you know, Mr. Lightning Eyes, which also coincidentally was my nickname in high school. It was not. It was not that in high school at all. It was probably Big Dork. So, you know, why this movie, right? You were like, we got to go with this movie next after, you know, last
I honestly don't remember why I picked it next. I think I just noticed that it was on Shudder, which it is. Like everyone, this is on Shudder, and you should use the promo code he mentioned earlier and go watch this movie because it's great.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss how it's not great for the next half hour or so, but it is. It's great, I promise.
Well, let's start off with the positive. Why is it great? I have some opinions. I did not hate it. It was not my favorite, but I did not hate it. Why? Why awesome?
So, like, first of all, I love movies. That there's this whole subgenre of movies from the 80s that I still want to, like, make up an anthology with, like, themed around this at some point, where they were all set in cemeteries, right? Like, they were all, like, teen horror movies set in cemeteries, basically. There's tons of them. Or mausoleums or whatever. And so it's one of those, which I love. But also, like, the thing I love the most about this movie is that it's the setup, the whole thing that they left out of that one sentence summary is, it feels like legit occult stuff.
Okay.
It doesn't feel like movie occult stuff until the very end. It feels like legitimate pseudoscience, right? Like, they're talking about, like, Kirlian photography, and they're talking about, like, really minor ESP, and, like, they're throwing around actual, like, occult jargon instead of, like, 80s Satanism shocker jargon. Like, it's not, like, because most movies, when they deal with the occult at all, right, it's not a cult in that movie. It has a simple, direct answer that everyone knows. A perfect example is like Jennifer's Body, right? Which is a fine movie. But in Jennifer's Body, at one point, they need to know how to kill this demon. So they go to their school library and get the first book they find on the subject, and it tells them how to kill this demon.
Hey, we all had a copy of The Book of Shadows floating around our public high school library, Orin. I don't know where you grew up, but here in the Midwest, we had that
library in my town, I guess. But yeah, like, you know, this feels like actual, you know, the actual, like, pseudoscience shit people believed. People actually believed this shit, right? This isn't like, werewolves are real and they work like this, like they did in the Universal movies or whatever. This is like actual pseudoscience that people bought into. And I love that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love that there, goes that route. Like, goes
there is a lot of chatter about psychic telekinesis, you know?
Yeah,
it's like they use that exact term like a dozen times. And I was like, I get it. Mr. Lightning Eyes has psychic telekinesis or whatever. But here's my question. is there a non-psychic telekinesis that I'm unaware of? Because I pretty much thought that was in the definition, right? Like, if you have... Oh, okay.
Well, etymologically, right? Telekinesis would just be remote moving. So I suppose you could do it ways that weren't psychically. I'm not sure what they'd be. But like anything that moved something without touching it.
I think the only way it could be non-psychic would be if you had to like shout it out, you know, like checkerboard, go move, right? And then I don't think it's psychic, right?
I don't know. I don't know at that point. We'd have to drill down into like some etymology. Like we'd have to be a linguistics podcast, I think, at this point.
Hey, you know what? I'm willing to fucking try anything. So check us out next week as we look at the root of the word telekinesis. Actually, I would totally listen to that podcast, but I'm also a gigantic fucking nerd. So yeah whatever.
At least they pronounced it right. It wasn't like the Dead Talk Back where they pronounce it telekinesis.
I actually kind of like that better, right? Telekinesis, whatever. We are rapidly losing our audience as we purposely misstate words. Okay, so a couple of things to pick out, at least about the casting of this movie, right? Number one, it has a really young Meg Tilly in it, right?
Yeah. In the lead role. I mean, lead-ish role.
Yeah.
Lead as it has. I mean, yeah.
And she's fine, right? She plays, I would not say a spectacular ingenue, but she fills the bill and screams correctly and is cute.
She's legitimately terrified of that mausoleum. Like, by the end, she seems like she is actually kind of losing her grip, which apparently she kind of was. Like, apparently the actress was really, like, not comfortable in the mausoleum at night, I gather, from reading some background stuff. So,
interesting.
She was apparently really genuinely pretty scared, but she seems it, that's for sure.
Yeah. And it also has Adam West in it, right?
Of course. Yeah. Good old Adam West.
Who
being a huge asshole in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was gonna say he's really undervalued in this, you know, like he's
borderline gaslighting his wife and just kind of being a dick. Yeah.
Right. And some of that is certainly that it is from 1983, right. You know, and there is certainly a certain amount of that just, I think, was pervading the culture at the time. But yeah, I was like, man, this was not the role I thought he was going to play. I did not love that part. But yeah, whatever. I think you get a little bit of his kind of snarky wit or whatever you want to call it. And that was good enough. So let me say, I didn't hate this movie. In fact, I really adored the last 25 minutes of this movie. Like, I really liked it.
We are mostly what save it, honestly. But
yeah, like they're damn near perfect in that they capture this kind of 1980s kind of. I don't want to use the term schlocky because it's not, but there are a lot of really slimy, grimy skeletons in this movie, right? Okay. And most of them feature this last kind of 25 minutes or so. But it was like a PG movie, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I don't know how it was a PG movie, but yes, apparently it was. Apparently, the Academy's like, you can have as many melting corpses as you want as long as they're dead already.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, the melting corpse, when I was researching for the movie, somebody said this has the best melting corpse since Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I was like, yes, that's where I've seen that. I swear to God, there are a couple that like they pulled right off of that set and specifically from, you know, the guy that opens the Ark. It's like,
they really use the same effect, which is the like. The light and then the fan on the wax, like it clearly used the same effect to do the melting. Like it was obviously the same technique. Yeah,
which totally works, you know.
It was fantastic.
Okay, so before we kind of get into the, you know, kind of deeper ideas of what the movie could be about, Can you give us a little bit of the backstory? Because, you know, all we have right now, and there may be some people watching right now that haven't seen the movie, like Mr. Lightning Eyes, what was his shtick in the beginning?
So apparently he was a psychic who could move things with his mind and also
psychic telekinesis. Yeah, yeah.
And was also a psychic vampire. He was a psychic of a lot of things. We're going to put the word psychic in front of everything we say.
Yep.
But he was a psychic vampire, so he could also feed on emotions. And so he would, like, scare people to death.
As so one would do, yeah.
So he was basically, like, a serial killer who scared girls to death. I don't know why girls, because that's who serial killers prey on, typically, right. I guess. I don't know. So my favorite thing is, like, it sets up what's going to happen at the end, because, like, in the tape that she listens to, his daughter listens to, that's, like, talking about what he did, it talks about him, like, doing this to rats. So he would, like, kill a rat and then use his corpse to scare the other rats to death and feed off of the energy they generated. And so that's what he's ostensibly doing to these girls at the beginning, and then presumably still doing at the end. Which incidentally back up at the beginning. So this movie has an amazing last 20 minutes or so, as we discussed. It also has an amazing first 10 minutes or so. That shot of the like five coroner vans all pulling up in unison the apartment building before you've seen what's inside it all is amazing.
Yeah. I know, I totally buy that. And I think taps into kind of a cultural zeitgeist that wasn't even invented yet, right? Because there's been this like murder, right? And it's kind of a very culty vibe about it, right? Like, right. All these dead people, including this guy that kind of organized the whole thing. And that coroner shot reminded me of there is a similar shot in a documentary about the Heaven's Gate folks, where like they discover all the bodies or whatever. And that, I mean, you got to get like wagons, yeah, you know, like you gotta get a whole host of ambulances or whatever to get rid of those bodies. And that is the shit that I find most haunting about that particular scenario. It is creepy when you see all of that together.
And that opening, like the way they shoot it and frame it, it has a very true crime like documentary kind of vibe. Like there's the radio voice talking over the shots, but no one in the shots is talking. You know, it's got a very like a very true crime kind of opening, and then, you know, it bogs in with like 80s teen movie horror stuff, walkie-talkie stuff that we talked about. But yeah, that opening really sets the stage for what's going to come at the end. You just got to get through all the stuff in between.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be perfectly honest, right there, the middle is very talkie-talkie. Like there's not a ton of shit that happens, right? Like I was putting together maybe a more general plot, or like at least a discussion of the second act of this film, right? Because I think the first act is kind of dominated by the setup of, you know, Lightning Eyes and his cult, or, you know, his murders and all that kind of jazz. And then we establish all the characters, but the middle act really is just a group of girls walking up and down a mausoleum, right?
Right. They drop her off at the mausoleum, and then they all leave, and then they all come back.
Right.
So like people leaving and coming back to a mausoleum, it's like it's a lot. It doesn't drag for me because the movie's too short for it to really drag for me. But like I can see how it totally would for other people. Like it is a very very soft middle. In a movie that has a very, very good beginning and ending. The middle is very saggy and messy.
So when I was putting together the analysis, right, I was like, the middle is very walkie and talkie. But I swear to God, that mausoleum has been used in a billion other movies, right? Like, it looks like...
It looks just like the one in Phantasm, you're right. I don't know that it is, but it looks just like it.
I don't know what it is about like all of the light that makes that so scary, but it's like this like crystal white, you know, it's pure white or whatever. It's very strange.
And like this one did some great stuff with the lighting, and not just at the end, but he had the like Shasta pink lighting and everything, which I adore. But like when you see the light coming down through the windows, the skylights, and then like they'll change the color of the light coming through the skylights or change the angle or something, it'll change the pattern on the floor and stuff. They did fun stuff with the mausoleum even before the crazy shit starts.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the mausoleum is a fun great. Like for me, part of the reason the middle doesn't drag more is because we're gonna spend the night in a mausoleum and we're gonna go sneak in and dress as ghosts and scare her stuff. Like that stuff is, I love that shit.
Like, yeah.
My goosebumps, you know, kids scary story book, let's all have a sleepover and tell scary stories. Like I love that shit. And so like the middle of it has enough of that to keep me going, even when it's just people walking around and talking, which it is 100%.
Yeah, well, and in that way, right, the setup is this like spooky thing that we are going to do to people. It reminded me of, I think the name is Hell Knight.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't know if it's the one you're talking about.
Yes, it 100. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's got Linda Blair in it.
Yep, that's all. Yeah.
Yeah,
this is actually really similar in weird ways to Hell Knight, like because the killer in Hell Knight is this kind of weird occult figure that the kids don't really know about.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it kind of taps into like, we broke into this place, it's creepy, to do this fake creepy thing that suddenly becomes very real. But it also just has remnants of that kind of satanic panic, right? Like when anything that was remotely occult, I mean, you know, we're both products of the 80s, you know, it was like anything remotely occult and, you know, Ryan from down the street's mom would be like, holy shit, we got to go to church. You know, you can't go play Dungeons
and Dragons. Yeah.
And I don't know about you all out there, but I was the type of kid who was like, oh shit, I need more of that, not less of it. You know, I was like, yes, feed me more. So I would totally be that kid that broke into a mausoleum or, you know, a creepy haunted house or whatever it was.
Right, 100%. Back to one of the things I love about this movie, actually. So I was talking about the villain from Hell Knight, and one of the things that makes it different from Hell Knight is that, like, and this is big spoilers for people who haven't seen it, we've already spoiled it for people who haven't seen it, so whatever, there's not much to it. But I love that the corpses at the end are still inanimate. They're floating around, but they're not moving. Like their hands don't work. They're just being remote controlled. They're just floating around, right? They're just being pushed, essentially, by somebody.
Yeah.
Psychic telekinesis. And even Raymar, Lightning Eyes there, who has an awesome name. It's a Raymar. That's an awesome psychic bad guy name. Even he, like, at one point he moves his arm. That's the only, like, he doesn't get up, he doesn't walk around, he doesn't talk, he's not a lich or anything, he's just a corpse. And, like, one of the things I love about that, for one thing, I love corpses that are scary. Like, I love inanimate objects that are somehow scary, right? This is where my love of puppets and dolls and things come from. But also, like the corpse from the Drop of Water segment in Mario Bava's Black Sabbath, or the corpse in the flashback scene in Dead Silence. So things like that, you know, like I love it when inanimate objects are terrifying. But also, like, we just did an episode not too long ago about Hell House, right? Legend of Hell House. And so, like, the whole argument, because again, this comes back to this guy doing, like, this, whoever made this movie did some research into actual occult shit, because this all sounds like real occult shit. But the whole big argument in Hell House is this house haunted by a surviving personality, or is it just haunted by a battery that goes through the motions of what it did before, right? It's not thinking, it's just repeating patterns. It's energy repeating patterns. And at the end of this movie, you could have that same argument. Like, you could have that same debate. Is Raymar reanimating himself and using these ghosts on purpose to scare these girls, to feed on them intentionally? Or is his corpse just a battery that is doing what it did while it was alive? Like, is this energy just following a channel that he laid down while he was alive, again because some magnetic material got near it and kicked it off.
Yeah, right. Or it's just like leftover weird psychic telekinesis juju or what, you know, whatever.
It was a charge, and whatever it is that it charges to got close to it, right? Because some girls came and that's who we killed.
Right.
And so it just turns back on.
I buy it. I think that's fair.
There's nothing in the movie that makes it impossible for either of those to be true, which is great. Like, I love that.
And even in his most malevolent, right, when he like wakes up fully or whatever, right? You're right. He's not like overly mobile, and that's what I could appreciate about the Ghoulies in this particular movie is like they're not physically intimidating. They're fucking gross, right? Like they're icky and scary and whatever. But it's not like these like oozy gooey skeletons are going to run you down. It's in fact, like I got the serious impression the people they kill, they just like suffocate. They just like lay on, right? Like there's enough of them that they overwhelm whoever the victim is. And
I think you're supposed to believe that essentially they get scared to death.
Okay.
The other people he killed supposedly was he scared them to death. Like he tormented them until they died of fright.
Yeah. I buy it. I mean, I'd be scared to death if a gigantic oozing pile of skeletons was like, let me lay on you.
Floating around and bumping into me. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
And you had no idea why, right? Like, because these girls have no idea who this guy is. He was a psychic, but like, you know, they don't know. They don't know what he did really. They don't know. They don't know the backstory. We do because his daughter listened to the tape, but they don't.
Right.
And when she shows up, you know, she's like not scared of him, right? She confronts him and isn't scared of him because she knows what's going on.
Yeah, well, that's we get some at the beginning of the film, especially we get these big like just exposition dumps, right? Mm-hmm. So that we are caught up quickly. And one of those exposition dumps alludes to a newspaper called The World of Occult, right? I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I sure as shit would subscribe to it.
Especially like if its reporters are like the creepy dude who is the reporter from it, right? Who seems like a dude who reports for The World of the Occult. Like,
right.
In any other movie, he would be the villain.
Uh-huh. But he's the guy with all the information, you know? And like I can just see like the police officers that are like, oh fuck, that's Mitch from World of the Occult again, you know, like don't make eye contact with that guy, right? Like he's gonna come over here and talk about, you know, Mr. Lightning Guys and I don't have 30 minutes to listen to this guy about ramble on about psychic telekinesis again. Yeah. But and what warmed my heart, right, is that's said as the title in the movie in 1983 to make it creepy, to add credence to whatever it is that they're saying about the occult. But it's like very taboo. And now I legitimately think if somebody put out that zine like on the internet, it would have 100,000 followers on fucking TikTok or whatever, you know, like, that's the most well-liked freaking Twitter account on the face of the planet. And we're like, hey,
come on. Can you imagine if that like really earnest, creepy dude had a podcast called World of the Occult? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Everyone would probably listen to it.
So yeah.
That shit.
Yeah. We'd be trying to book him as a guest, you know, and be like, hey, let's get Frederick from the World of the Occult.
Yeah.
I might look for the guy anyways. I don't know. But yeah. You know, it's I think little things like that make this film redeemable, you know, like it is a little slow from time to time. It meanders, but you know, I think there are a couple of things that make it really impressive. First off, the entirety of this film was made in 28 days, which I think is incredible, right? Yeah. Like it is, it's one thing to make an indie feature on the quick, on the dime with a good sized team and some money. But like these guys put together a big released film in 28 days. And that includes all of the you know, editing, all of the sound design, all of the special effects, all of that from first scene to release in 28 days. So
adding all the many, many, many optical lightning effects.
Yeah.
Many, many optical lightning effects.
So here's my question, right? Because it does use those optical effects and really kind of neat gel lighting and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But like, do you think it is a little jallowy, maybe?
I don't know. What I know is that, so you mentioned that Tom, in the notes, you mentioned that Tom McLaughlin wrote and directed this, who also wrote the Jason Lives, the Friday 13th, Part 6.
Right, and, correct. Like,
that dude definitely loves his optical lightning effects. Like, that movie, again, a Jason movie, which does not, you know, immediately, when you think Jason movies, you do not immediately go, yes, lightning. That's what I think of. Like, that movie,
yeah, right.
Like, with optical lightning effects. Like, this dude loves them, which I also love them. So, you know, good for him.
Sure.
This dude, like, obviously loves his optical lightning effects, which is great. I'm here for it.
Yeah, and I might add, if you watch that Friday the 13th after watching this film, I think they would play well together, because you get a little bit of kind of McLaughlin's world, right? Like, what he enjoys, what he thinks is scary and creepy.
Yeah,
because I might go ahead.
He definitely needs, like, if you watch the video, you will also notice that he needs a tighter, like, screenwriter or something, because Jason Lives is literally just people stumbling on Jason, and then people stumbling on Jason again, and then people stumbling on Jason again. Like, its structure is terrible.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie. It's a fun movie, but it's a fun movie in spite of its story structure, because its story structure is garbage.
Well, and I might add, it's got the, you know, that Friday the 13th has a really strong first act, right? Yep. Like, that whole, like,
and
trying to
last act. Yep.
Yeah. Like, that's very cool. And the end of the movie, I think, is interesting and does some interesting shit. It's got a really weird and meandering second act, you know, yep. Kind of the same problems that we have here. It's more like walkie and stabby than walkie and talkie, but, you know, it suffers from.
There's a lot of, like, walking and talking in the lead ups to Jason. Like, there's a lot of people just wandering around talking about whatever they're doing at a given moment right before Jason kills them.
Yeah. I've got this doozy of a quote from an article that we found here from Fonts in Use. And I think it's really interesting, and it gives you some background on what McLaughlin's world is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it says McLaughlin's background in mime companies was apparent in the script. It's 80% visual and 20% dialogue. As a student in Paris in the late 60s, he once visited the catacombs of wall-to-wall human skeletons under the city, because that's how the French buried their dead centuries ago. And this experience left an indelible mark on his young psyche. So I loved that. It kind of alludes to that, right? Like, it's all of these skeletons that have come to life. And that is at its strongest, I think, that makes this movie at its strongest. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, the last act of this movie is so good. And so, like, it's so gorgeous and so atmospheric and so weird. Because, like, it would have been something, any other movie in the 80s especially, these would have just been zombies, right? You'd have just had reanimated corpses coming out and attacking these girls at the end. That's what would have happened. And, like, the fact that the corpses are not that they're these weird, stiff dummies instead, is so strange and creepy and unlike anything else. Like, there's no other movie that does this ever anywhere.
Well, and they're much closer to your traditional, like, spooky Halloween skeleton than they are, like, a reanimated actual dead body, which I think is an allusion to those kind of French catacombs, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so later in that article, they talk about how, like, to like prove proof of concept, he dragged all of these investors to that mausoleum and he mocked up some of those skeletons. And they were like, that's cool. Can you have it done in 3 weeks? You know? And he was like, yeah, I think I can.
Yeah.
And I think it just proves that if you're a filmmaker, with an interesting idea, you should fucking go for it, man. Yeah, and just be like, yeah. Which I think is a really strong lesson for, you know, teachers and students alike to kind of pick up on, man. There's no reason why, if you are a photographer, you shouldn't go fucking take some pictures. If you're a writer, you should go write. If you want to make films, go make fucking films and make them with goofy, greasy, you know, awful skeletons. And if you happen to know somebody that
put in all the pink lightning or pink light and lightning effects you can cram in there.
Yeah.
At least this idiot will love it. Yeah. So
yeah, you might end up on an episode of the Horror Podcast, and we'll say that it's walkie and talkie, but well worth your time or whatever. I will also add, though, that we are not the only ones that maybe had issues with it. And while we liked it, there are plenty of people that did not. And I've got one here. You ready for, I've decided instead of Amazon from time to time, I'm going to look at the 1-star reviews on Letterboxd, because
Letterboxd is the film site for people who hate movies. So it makes sense. Like everyone on Letterboxd fucking hates all movies, all of them all the time.
Yeah. Well,
it's good. Go there and get all the reviews of people who just fucking hate everything they watch.
Yeah. And you get two things for sure, right? Number one, the problem with Amazon reviews is like 90% of the 1-star reviews are like, I didn't like the format I got, you know, or like my box art was all screwed up, or like they sent me a region B one instead of, you know, it's all like shit that has nothing to do with the movie.
Yeah.
Which I think is horse shit, and I think Amazon should take it off. But, you know, Jeff Bezos has $1 trillion, and I'm a teacher.
And so they should at least, like, put a channel in there or something where it's like, this is a review of the movie, and this is a review of the fucking box it came in.
Yeah, or the fucking post office for taking too long to get me the DVD. Yeah. But, so, Letterboxd, you never have that. You never have people bitching about the format that it comes in.
Right.
And I swear to God, if you find a review that's more than one or two sentences, everybody thinks that they're fucking Gene Siskel, you know, like it's like the post, but, and trust me, I do a fair share of that. My wife would tell you I can be really goddamn pretentious from time to time. So I own that could be me. But these fucking people are like, let me talk to you about why the search for Smurfette is, you know, all about the existential dread of, and it's like, oh my God. Right. So.
And they usually won't talk to you about it either. They'll just like throw the word out there as though you agree already.
Right.
And right. They'll be talking about it. Like, yeah. Anyway, but yes, enough picking on Letterboxd users, of which I am one.
Me too. Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. We're nothing if we're not hypocrites. So, yeah, whatever. Okay. So here is our anonymous Letterboxd user. What we're dealing with here is a man who knew telekinesis and can move things with his mind while he was alive.
He knew both those things. Incidentally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He both knew telekinesis and could move things with his mind, whatever. Yeah, anyway. Sorry.
Well, he knew what the word was, right? And he could do it. Yeah, yeah. It's important. He's not just like Jethro down the road. It's like, mama, I can move things with my mind. I don't know what that's called. Yeah. That same man is now dead. I might have been able to praise the atmosphere and the setting of this film, but the entire plot and reason for the entire thing to happen is just so dumb. And things, here's where it falls apart. And things doesn't really begin to shake before it's about 10 minutes left of the movie. I guess that's a prerequisite that you have never, ever seen a dead body before to find this scary. Because in a nutshell, that's the only thing One Dark Night has to offer. It's most admirable how badly this movie doesn't want the plot to happen. You know a movie is bad when the best character in it is a toothbrush, which is, I think, a really funny comment at the end.
It is. And I can't believe, like, I just literally just reading that, I cannot believe that we got through this entire thing and never fucking talked about that girl with the toothbrush in her mouth the whole movie. That is the weirdest thing. Like,
weird, right? Fucking so weird.
So it's great. So the first time I ever watched this movie, I posted on Facebook about watching this movie, and immediately got a comment from someone who I know, a friend I know, you know, someone I know, and she was like, oh my God, I saw that movie when I was in high school, and I was so into that whole thing that I started doing that with a toothbrush. And I'm like, that's something. That's something right there. That's
imagine that, like, that being your thing, right? Like, I saw The Karate Kid, and I spent like all last week watching the Cobra Kai shit on Netflix, which is like a Hallmark movie for dudes that grew up in the 80s, you know? That is to say, I fucking loved every minute of it, but you know, like it is, yeah. But like, I bought a karate gi, right? Like, I made my parents buy 8-year-old me a karate gi. That was my thing. I wanted to emulate Ralph Macchio. Your friend was like, I want to emulate
this. I wish I had a toothbrush in my mouth. Like, yeah, also, I want to emulate this kind of not nice girl at all.
She's right.
But you know,
she kind of sucks, right? Yeah.
And she was not the really villain girl, but she was definitely not, like, she was definitely in the middle of the spectrum of the three bad girls, for sure.
Well, and nothing particularly cool, you know? Like,
apparently she was just like, yeah, fuck yeah, chewing on a toothbrush, that's rad. Which, you know, I was stupid when I was in high school, too, so.
Yeah, you know, I guess the father and teacher in me is like, I guess it's better than smoking, but... also, I probably would tease the hell out of, and this is 40-year-old me, I would tease the hell out of any high school student I saw chewing a toothbrush. Also, we all have fucking masks on, so I'd be like, I don't understand. Yeah, like, I don't get the physics of that, but maybe don't do that. I don't know. Also, I have this really terrible habit. This is embarrassing, but you know, whatever. It's confession time. Sometimes I will brush too hard and I will like jam myself in my gums with my toothbrush. And I would be really paranoid. I would trip and fall and fucking jam that thing down my throat or something.
Yep. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. It was such a weird like mannerism to give this character. And like, she just sticks with it like literally to the last shot of the movie, right? And it's so weird. So weird.
You wonder if that was written into the script, right? Or if that's just a choice that actress made.
It was. So apparently, like, it was based on some friend Tom McLaughlin had.
Okay. Who did
this, I guess. So apparently there's been at least two real people who did this in the real world.
And what makes you think? Do you have, like, your real toothbrush and your chewing toothbrush, you know?
You're bad for brushing. I mean, don't use that one for brushing. That's not good.
And are you like, hey, Ma, I need a new chewing toothbrush because I've chewed through this one. Yeah, what the fuck ever. So it is by far. In fact, there is a close-up at the end of this film of a toothbrush, right?
It's the final shot of the film, right? Is this like poignant shot of this toothbrush, which is amazing. But yeah. And now that I think about it, so like, I wonder, so like people who suffer from or who experience, I suppose, mental conditions, I guess. I'm using very ableist language, I'm sure, and I do not mean to be at all, but I'm just struggling for words. But people who easily become overstimulated, right? People for whom like external stimulus gets to be too much really easily for any number of different reasons, they actually sell jewelry and things that's made of like safe plastic or safe rubber for you to chew on, because that's one of the ways that people will cope with stimulus is by chewing things like absently. And so it makes me wonder now if like, obviously the character was not written that way, but I wonder if Tom McLaughlin's friend maybe was doing that and that's what caused this, and so like this character could then be read as that. I don't know.
I love that you have humanized this character to and this degree, you know?
Like, yeah, I don't know. It's but like this just occurred to me literally just now, but like that's a real thing that they like sell products for, but they didn't back in 1983. So maybe you fucking shoot on your toothbrush back then, you know? That's the best you could fucking do. We weren't as sensitive in 1983, you know?
This is why you are a host of this show, right? You have taken this bizarre thing here and you've been like, hey, back off of this poor girl. She clearly had some stimulus issues.
Right?
Let her chew her fucking toothbrush, Tyler. Let her chew her
fucking toothbrush, Jesus.
Hey, next time we meet up, I'm going to have a beer in a hand and a toothbrush in the other, motherfucker. All right. We'll just call it good. Oh, man. I think we have survived one dark night. So before we announce what we're going to do next time, say that again.
Yeah, we're officially in the sisters, right?
Like, yes.
We're in education, so.
I've always wanted to be in a weird pseudo cultish sorority. So, yes.
One of those purple jackets. Those were great. I want one of those.
Yeah, right. I have a members only jacket you can have.
Is it purple? Is it bright fucking purple?
No, but I'll keep looking. Oren, where can they find more of your stuff on the internet?
I am as always Oren Gray at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Letterboxd, all those kind of places, as well as at OrenGray.com and sporadically at Signal Horizon.
Sounds good. You can find me running the day-to-day at Signal Horizon. We have all kinds of writers. If you would like to communicate directly with me, you can always reach out at Tyler@SignalHorizon.com. I would be glad to answer any kind of emails. If you have recommendations, feel free to reach out to me. You can find me at Twitter tweeting about horror and movies and politics and the politics of horror movies at Ty Unsel. Otherwise, yeah, man, I think that pretty much wraps up tonight's discussion. Next week, we're going to see how this goes, okay? Because there's a whole backstory. My son is big into TikTok, okay? And because I'm a good dad and I am desperate to hold on to whatever connection I have with my teenage son, like, I'm going to get a TikTok too, okay? So I've been, you know, scrolling through my TikTok shit, right? And I'm on teacher TikTok and there's creepy TikTok, which I kind of appreciate. But I saw this TikTok video of this asshole, okay? And he's like, here's my beachfront house in Malibu that I share with other social media influencers. And he like uses that term, right? And which I automatically think is like super fucking douchey, but maybe that's just me being old. I don't know. But then he tours this building and he's like, this is Sarah. She's into personal finance TikTok. And currently she's talking to people and giving them advice. And she's like 20 fucking 2 years old. I'm like, come on, really? This is our advice person. And then they'll go over to the sports and nutrition people who are like working out, right? And they are they are all young and they're all very, very attractive. And they're all very like fake, you know, very influencer fake. And like I watched this and then I made my wife watch it and I was like, I hope an asteroid falls on this fucking house like tomorrow, right? Because this is like 12 of these people that are all like this. I will link to this tweet in the show notes for this episode. But somebody captured that video on Twitter and then tweeted above it, this house should be used for the exterminating angel, which is a movie made in the 1960s that is really metaphorical. But the long story short is a group of really wealthy aristocrats get trapped in a house and they like fucking eat each other and shit. So I was like, huh, now I have a cultural context for this movie. It's time to watch it. So you and I are going to weed our way through this fucking weird ass movie and it's going to be a hoot.
As I said to you before the show started, and I'm going to say it again on the air, I love that the guy who constantly says that Suspiria is like too complicated and smart for him picked The Exterminating Angel. That's delightful. That's really good.
But when shit is this fucked up, and I got to admit, I've only read about it so far. I haven't seen it yet. When shit is this fucked up, it's only going to prove to be easy to kind of fit whatever agenda that you have within it, you know. It's like, yes, that's my shit. I can't wait. So I will tell you all, you can check out that movie on Canopy, which is the free streaming service that your library will allow you to set up. And Canopy is fucking rad because it's got all kinds of like Academy Award winning movies and all kinds of stuff that you can stream.
A bunch of the Criterion stuff on it, I think, or used to.
Yeah.
Before. I don't know if it still does, but
Yeah. Well, and this is one of those movies. This is a Criterion Collection movie. It's also got the entirety of the A24 studio releases that are out, like on home streaming. So, like, it's awesome and entirely free, and you should totally take advantage of it. So, and you should go watch it and then come back to listen to us fight about the true meaning of the exterminating angel. Yeah. But also, go ahead.
I was just going to listen to us just talk about the cutting people's eyeballs in a different movie by the same director.
Yeah. Well, also, we'll fight about how to say this dude's fucking name, because I don't think either one of us really has it down.
I need to look it up because I don't want to screw it up on the air right now. But you all fucking know who made Exterminating Angel. If you don't, it's the guy who made Shin in the Andalusian. Yeah. See, I can't say that either. Andalusian Dog, that movie.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. I'll let you say all that hard shit. I got no problems with it. And then I'll go look his name up on YouTube and hope I don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time, be safe, especially you teachers out there. Wear your mask. Don't let anybody cough or throw up on you. And we'll meet back here in 2 weeks. So class dismissed.
Brush your teeth up and down. Brush your teeth round and round. Brush your teeth from left to right. Brush your teeth in the morning and night. Brush, brush, brush. Brush, brush, brush. Brush your teeth in the morning and night. Brush your teeth to keep them white. Brush your teeth so your smile is bright. Brush your teeth, it's so much fun. Brush your teeth when the day's begun. Brush, brush, brush. Brush, brush, brush. Brush your teeth when the day's begun. Brush your teeth, just open wide. Brush your teeth from side to side. Brush your teeth, you sleepy head. Brush your teeth before you go to bed. Brush, brush, brush. Brush, brush, brush. Brush your teeth before you go to bed. Brush your teeth in the morning and night.